Hello, I'm Marc-André Francard. This is number 0550, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0550. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actress Lee Purcell, who is one of the stars of the movie Carol of the Bells. It's a film that features a large number of cast and crew who have disabilities.
It was very important to me that three people in the cast do have disabilities, including the actress who plays the title role of the mother with a disability, Carol, and that was played by Andrea Friedman, and then R.J. Mitty, who plays the young man. He actually does have cerebral palsy, but we don't even mention it. He's just another actor playing a role, which I think is great. And then Jerry Jewell, who has cerebral palsy, and she plays a nun. And then our crew was made up of 70%, that's 70 people who had disabilities.
MJ Preston, author of the thriller novel 4, the sequel to Highwayman. MJ is a former trucker who writes about a serial killer.
It did play into my writing because Highwayman and 4, there's a lot of talk about the highways in the United States, and the whole thing does take place in the United States, and all of those highways that, you know, where there's body dump sites where the police are chasing a guy or anything like that, those are places that I have been. I ran all over the United States as well, so I know most of those roads and places intimately, so that really did help. I didn't kill anybody. But I did a heck of a lot of research, too, for these books.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0550, was Marc-André Francourt, who is a real estate agent here in Montreal with REMAX. Thank you very much, Marc-André, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Kentucky woman was busted after she tried to pass off dog pee as her own to her probation officer. 40-year-old Julie Miller was asked to provide urine for a drug test as part of her scheduled probation visit, according to Pineville Police Department. But instead, Miller snuck in a sample of urine in an attempt to pass it off as her own. Officials determined that the urine didn't belong to Miller and confronted her about the sample. She told officers that she brought urine in from her dog because she knew that she would fail the drug test, admitting to using methamphetamines and also the painkiller Suboxone. Now, Miller was arrested and booked into Bell County Detention Center, where she faces charges for trafficking in a controlled substance and tampering with physical evidence. Oh, Julie, you're in trouble. A French amateur soccer player has been issued a 5-year ban after he bit an opponent's penis so forcefully that the victim required multiple stitches for his wounds. According to ESPN, a player from AS Sotrich attacked his SC Terville opponent in November of 2019. During the altercation, the Sotrich player managed to bite the victim's genitals so hard that he was sent to hospital and required at least 10 stitches to close up his injuries. The two players were not named by the local media for legal reasons. A disciplinary committee recently met to decide a punishment for the attacker and gave him a 5-year suspension. The committee also penalized the victim, banning him until June 2020 for aggressive behavior towards his opponent. Wow. Perhaps the victim dared to use the street vernacular for vacuum my privates. You know, siphon thy Richard. Now, on this show, we've done several stories over the years that deal with the idiocy of some zero-tolerance policies. And when you break them down, they're just really a chance for some people to do zero thinking. Here's the latest incarnation. Valley Forge Elementary School in Tredyffin Township, Pennsylvania, called in police and initiated a threat assessment after a student allegedly held up her fingers in the shape of a gun and told the teacher, "I shoot you." The student was hardly any sort of threat, not just because she's only 6 years old, but also because she has Down syndrome. School staff familiar with the girl said her actions were isolated. The threat assessment team found she presented no threat and had no actual intention to harm anyone. Still, police interviewed the parents anyway. "You don't understand, Maggie Gaines," the girl's mother told them. "This is insane." The Tredyffin East Town School District says that under their zero-tolerance policy, school officials had to call police, even though state guidelines don't require it. "This is not a process that's going to catch the next school shooter," commented senior policy advocate Harold Jordan of the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania, but district officials stand by their policy. Wow. You know, there are some in society who will tell you that people with Down syndrome are less than. No, it's been my experience on this show that school administrators are less than. And speaking of brilliance or the lack thereof in schools, in a report published on February 18th, school districts struggling to comply with the state's requirement that every school have a good guy with a gun are challenged to find enough qualified applicants. Among recent hiccups, near Orlando, a safe school officer sent her husband a nude video, which she recorded in a school bathroom while on her lunch break. In Hillsborough County, a school guardian thought her gun was unloaded when she shot through a mirror as she practiced in front of it for her firearms certification. Another officer pawned his service weapon and ballistic vest. His supervisor discovered he was carrying a pellet gun in his holster. Bob Galtieri, the sheriff in Pinellas County, remarked, "The reality is that there is no perfect in the world." Yeah, and if there were perfect in the world, the odds of finding it in Florida are slim to none. Lacey, the Norwegian forest cat, is at the center of a heated 2-year dispute in Brewerton, New York, that is now gone to state Supreme Court. Original owner Carol Money accuses adoptive owner Danette Romano of refusing to let Lacey sleep in bed with her, a key provision that Money says was in the adoption agreement both parties signed back in April of 2018. According to the lawsuit, Money regularly visited Lacey in her new home after the adoption and found the cat to be skittish and fearful and became very upset after Romano's husband allegedly admitted, "We don't let Lacey sleep with us." By December 20th, tensions had increased to the point that Romano complained to the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office and had her lawyer send Money a letter ordering her to stop contacting Romano. Money's lawsuit accuses Romano of breach of contract and lying about her intention to let Lacey sleep in her bed and demands the return of the cat. Okay, you all know how I feel about cats. They're evil. Little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. I truly do believe that, like Russian intelligence, cats are busy poisoning the minds of everybody on both sides just to cause chaos and division. It's also nice to know that the Supreme Court for the state of New York has everything under control, that they have time for such an idiotic case. Yeah. And speaking of time, it's time to check the exits. It's time for the Darwin File.
I am the Grim Reaper. I am death.
Houston, Texas police responded to a report of a man exposing himself at a Whataburger fast food joint at around 10:15 p.m. When an officer arrived, the suspect ran, running across the East Freeway. It was too dangerous for officers to give chase, especially for such a minor crime, so an officer was sent to the far side of the freeway to wait for the man to appear. He didn't. While the man made it across all of the westbound lanes without incident, on the eastbound lanes he was hit by an 18-wheeler and killed. You know, death from exposure is fairly common. However, death from indecent exposure, much more rare. But as we all know, the tree of life is often self-pruning.
I have come for you.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Lea Purcell has had a long and illustrious career starring opposite some of Hollywood's most popular leading men, including James Garner, Richard Thomas, Paul Sorvino, Tom Selleck, and Nicolas Cage, just to name a few. One recent project was a holiday movie called Carol of the Bells, which had a unique cast. Lea joins us on the line from Los Angeles to talk about that and her career. Hi, Lea.
Hi, Peter. I'm glad to be here today.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, I want to talk about Carol of the Bells. I know it's a holiday movie and we've just finished the Christmas holidays, but I think it's important to talk about, and that's because the cast, part of the cast and part of the crew were very unique individuals. Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, it's not just a holiday movie. Yes, it is. It does have a holiday theme, but I think it's much more than that, and I think it's the kind of movie you can watch year-round because of the subject matter, and like you said, the cast and the crew. It's about a young man who goes in search of his birth parents. He was adopted out at birth, and when he finds his birth mother, discovers that she has a disability, and he runs away. He can't handle it. Doesn't know what to do. Didn't expect that, and so it's very it was very important to me that the three people in the cast do have disabilities, including the actress who plays the title role of the mother with a disability, Carol, as in Carol of the Bells. And that was played by Andrea Friedman. And then R.J. Mitty, who plays the young man, he actually does have cerebral palsy, but we don't even mention it. He's just another actor playing a role, which I think is great. And then Jerry Jewell, who has cerebral palsy, and she plays a nun in the movie. And then our crew was made up of 70%, that's 70, people who had disabilities, and they were all trained. They went to school. There's Joey Travolta has seven schools across California and then several camps during the summer where he trains people with disabilities to work on film crews. So these were graduates of his school. So they were very well trained, very experienced, and a delight to be around. So it was a very groundbreaking movie, I think, and it is coming out on DVD on March 3rd, so people can catch it there. And it will also be streaming on March 3rd on most platforms.
And we should mention Joey Travolta is the director of the movie.
He is the director and also the founder of the schools and the founder of Inclusion Films.
Now, how did you come to this role, and what is the role that you play?
Joey made me an offer, traditional, you know, through my agent, and sent me some videos of the students in the schools, and then some of the students working with his brother, John, whom I know for a long, long time. And I read the script and watched the video, and my agent did the same, and we said, well, this is a no-brainer. I have to do this. And the role I play is Lillian, who is a caregiver, runs the care facility that Carol lives in and is Carol's best friend, confidant, and is very instrumental in the plot in that she comes in, as the wife does, as the young man cannot handle the situation. And between us, we make it, I don't want to tell you what, but we make it go well.
With such a large crew with disabilities and also those on camera, how has that changed the dynamic while shooting? How did it change the actual day-to-day shooting schedule, if any?
Well, it's interesting. It did not change it because you don't know who have disabilities and who doesn't on the crew, unless it's an obvious physical one. It did change it in a fun way in that the crew was so enthusiastic and so excited that they would show up an hour early. So that we would get to the set and be like, well, why are they all here? Because usually the actors get there first and the trucks. And then the crew, unless it's the drivers or the makeup artists, and then the camera crew and so forth arrive. But they were all there an hour early, so that was really fun.
It must have been, like I said, like you just said, it must have been a fun shoot to work on. How does it compare to other shoots you've worked on?
Well, it was a very fast shoot, for one thing, extremely fast. We had the usual long hours, and we had a really good setup in that we were shooting all through Bakersfield, and people were incredibly generous and incredibly kind, letting us, you know, come into their homes and places of business, and so it was very good, and in that way it was very typical. I can't really think that it was that different from any other shoot, and only that it was very fast. But that's true in low budgets, and this was a low budget.
Well, let's talk about some of the other things you've done. As I mentioned, you've had some great leading men that you've worked against. You've had a long and illustrious career, film and television.
True.
Did little Lee Purcell, were you always going to be an actress?
Well, I guess it was never really a conscious decision. It just started happening. I started modeling for a big store named Marcus, which is, I don't know if you have them in Canada, but it's a major, major store here. When I was 3, I was a toddler model. And then when I was 5, we moved a lot in my very young years. And we were living in near Memphis on a naval base. And I started doing TV when I was 5 in Memphis. And then I became a dancer and started traveling with a company when I was 13. And so it just kind of was there. It was kind of, you know, just was there. And then I had to make a big decision about would I be a dancer or would I be an actress? And I did keep dancing for quite a while, but then I decided that acting was the longer career. So I stuck with that, and that's worked. That's worked just fine.
Was that a tough choice for you to make at the time?
It was, actually. It was really, and it was also, as I learned later, because I was real young and naive. It was also an unnecessary choice, but I didn't know that. I thought I had to choose one art form over another. I don't know why I thought that, but I did. And so, it was a very tough choice.
You were also mentored by people like Steve McQueen.
Well, he was my mentor. He was my one and only mentor, and that was an incredible break. And something I will never forget and something I'm always grateful for. And whenever I see a photo of him anywhere, I always get a big smile on my face because he was incredibly important to my young life. And I didn't know how important it was, again, being young, kind of stupid, but he was. He chose me out of 500 actresses to be in a film called Adam at 6 a.m. opposite Michael Douglas, although I was hired first, and then Michael was hired. That never happened again. And then he mentored me, and he taught me a lot. And it was and I'm in a lot of books about Steve, and this is all public knowledge. People can look it up. And he was incredibly kind. He was a father figure to me.
Actress Lea Purcell is one of the stars of the movie Carol of the Bells, which is coming out on streaming services and also as a DVD. We're going to take a quick break and continue talking with Lea here on The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We'll be right back.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
We're talking with actress Lea Purcell, who has had a long and illustrious career starring opposite some of Hollywood's most popular leading men. She is currently in a film called Carol of the Bells, which is coming out on streaming services and also on DVD in March. And Carol, I wanted to ask this question about your mentor. You were mentored by the great Steve McQueen. People have to want to mentor people because usually they see a spark or they see something. What do you think Steve saw in you that said, I'm going to help this one with her career?
You know, that's a really interesting question, Peter. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before. But what comes to mind immediately is that the role took about five different auditions and a screen test to get. It was not easy, and I was really young. And when I got called in on a Saturday morning, which was very unusual at that time, and still is, to just come over, and they didn't tell me why, to come over to the studio. And I went, and I walked in, and there was Steve McQueen. And I wasn't in awe of him because he was of a different generation. He was of my parents' generation, which sounds so strange now. But we sat and we talked for, I don't know, 2 hours maybe, 3 hours. And I think it was that meeting that, I mean, I had to keep auditioning and doing the screen test. But I think it was that meeting that showed us both that we were very similar in a lot of ways. I mean, he was obviously the biggest movie star in the world, and I was no one. But we had a similarity in our demeanor and how we grew up and just viewpoints. We both rode motorcycles. We both liked fast cars. We were both adrenaline junkies, and we both had come from, I mean, he had come from, I think, a rougher situation than I did. He spent some time in a boys' home, foster homes, and I didn't have to do that, even though I was kind of moved around a lot. But he even said it. I've read quotes where he talked about that we had similarities. So I think it was that. And then I think he had already decided that if I got the role, he would mentor me. And I think that's how it happened, actually.
Now, as an actress, as someone who's been very successful, when you go through that mentoring process with somebody and you think back to how it helped you as a young actress, does that play in your mind when you work with young actors today?
Yes. Oh, yeah. You just gave me chills. Yeah, that's a really good question, too. Yes, it definitely does. I actually get really worried about young actors when I see them doing, you know, stupid things. And I try to maybe say something, but, you know, most people don't want to hear, Peter. They don't. And I didn't want to hear when I was a kid until it came to Steve. And then I did want to hear. And, I really think it would be wonderful if every young actor could have a mentor. But there aren't enough mentors to go around. There's so many actors. But maybe when you get to a certain level, if you have demonstrated that you have the the grit it takes, you know, to remain being an actor, because it's a hard life. It's not easy. People outside think that, oh, it's such a cushy life, but it's really a hard life. And I think it would be great if more people did have mentors.
Well, speaking from the point of view of the young actor or actress today, when you started, you may have had to deal with tabloids, but you didn't have to deal with social media. If you were starting today, what kind of minefields would you think you'd have to try to avoid?
Well, I think social media and the tabloids are all one and the same. It's just that social media has a much bigger, more expansive reach, obviously. But the tabloids were horrific. And if people listening don't know what a tabloid was, well, they still exist. It's the National Enquirer. It's the cheesy, sleazy newspapers you see when you're standing in line at the supermarket. And what they had the big headlines, you know, so-and-so has been abducted by aliens, and, you know, so-and-so, I don't, just crazy, crazy stuff. And they still pick on actors and actresses and politicians and directors and so forth. Just social media, like I said, has a bigger and wider reach. But I don't see any difference other than that. Social media, of course, has a value, whereas the tabloids, I don't see any value. So you can take social media, you take the good with the bad. You know, I mean, I like social media because people can find me, and I'm all over social media, and I like it because I hear from people that I would have never have heard from otherwise, and I welcome that. And I just got an email from a 94-year-old woman who'd seen me in a Hallmark movie recently and reached out, and I thought, wow, that's really valuable. I like that. And I answered her, of course, and told her, hey, you know, stay in touch. And she somehow maneuvered social media to find out. I mean, she didn't send the email to me directly, but to my team. And then they sent it to me, and then I answered her directly. So social media is very valuable, but it's also a double-edged sword.
I mentioned earlier some of the leading men you worked with, and mm-hmm. Some of the others, Jack Lord, Barry Bostwick, Lou Gossett
Kirk
Jr.
Douglas.
Michael Douglas. I was about to
Orson
mention.
Welles.
Yeah, I was about to mention that you have worked with two generations of actors. You worked with both Michael Douglas and Kirk Douglas. You worked with Beau Bridges and Lloyd Bridges.
Yes, that's right. And I worked with, in fact, you know, Kirk just passed away at 103, I believe.
103, yeah.
I'm in my office, and I'm looking at a note on my bulletin board that Kirk wrote me 2-3 months ago. And, you know, he was still, the guy was amazing. He was just still very mindful and social, and just what a blessing. And then, of course, I worked with his son in my very first film, like we talked about. And then Lloyd and Beau's a friend of mine, and I just saw him recently. But we worked on the same project together. We did a TV movie, I think, miniseries TV movie, for which I was nominated for my second Emmy. And Lloyd and Beau were both in it. It was called Secret Sins of the Father, and Beau directed it. And so, yeah, I've been very fortunate. I'm not surprised. I won't be surprised if I start working with third and fourth generations.
Well, having said that, is there anything coming up for you besides Carol of the Bells, which is just about to be released on DVD, that you're looking forward to?
I have several, because I also produce.
Right.
And write. And so I have several projects of my own that I'm quite excited about, that are in various stages of development, and that'll be, and when those come to fruition, and knock on wood, I hope they do, I will be announcing those on my social media. So if people want to follow me, I have my own website, leepurcell.com. I'm on all the typical t- Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and I have a Facebook fan page. So people, I do announce when I'm doing things there so people can always know what's up.
As a producer, you get to control your own destiny, but even so, is there...
Somewhat.
Somewhat, yes. Is there something, with all the things that you've done in your career, is there still something or a part or a type of character that you say, gosh, I'd love to get a chance to play that, but it hasn't happened yet?
Yes, there are actually many things. I'd like to do more Shakespeare. I'm Shakespearean trained in London. I'd like to, oddly enough, I'd like to play a female mob boss. I keep looking for those roles, and I would really like to do that. It has been done, but I think it could be done more. I mean, if the men can play mob bosses for the last 50 years over and over, why not women? And I would like to, I have played politicians. I played the only surviving politician in one movie called Kids Versus Monsters. But I'd like to play the President of the United States. I haven't been able to do that yet. I don't know. I've done a lot. But those come to mind. So if anybody's got anything out there, hey, find me on social media.
Getting back to Carol of the Bells, as you mentioned, it's coming out on DVD. It's
And streaming.
What, I'm sure with every role you've played, with every work situation you've been involved in, after shooting the film, you've taken away something from the experience of doing that particular role, that particular part. What have you taken away from Carol of the Bells?
Well, I did a lot of research before we did the film on various disabilities and also caregivers, and I interviewed several caregivers because I really didn't know anything about that world other than, volunteer work I've done with Special Olympics, things like that. But I really didn't know anything in depth about it. So I think what I take away from the film is a greater understanding of the world of people with disabilities and really the viewpoint that we are no different from them and they are no different from us and there is no them and us. It's all just us. And that we have, we all have our disabilities. Whether you can see them, whether people know about it, there's always something. Everybody's got something. Nobody is perfect. And I think that is what I take away.
Again, the film is called Carol of the Bells. It's coming out streaming and also on DVD. You mentioned your website, which is leepurcell.com, and you're also on various other social media. Lee, I thank you very, very much for having the opportunity to talk to you. It was a great pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. And it was a privilege and an honor to talk to you. So thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
Actress Lee Purcell. Again, her movie is called Carol of the Bells. It is both on streaming services and out on DVD. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0550. And you can find links to Lee's site, plus links to a couple of trailers and clips that you can check out featuring the film Carol of the Bells.
Incoming subspace signal.
Time to check the mailbag. We get listeners from various sources, including shortwave. So I'd like to give a shout out to Cyril Grimshaw, who hears us via shortwave at around 0829 to 0929 GMT. On a frequency of 15150 kilohertz, which is targeted towards Central Africa. Cyril hears us in Hobart, Tasmania, Australia. He writes that he's located 30 kilometers from Hobart. He can hear us via shortwave, but as shortwave often does, it fades in and out. Also, unfortunately, his internet connection is too slow for streaming audio. Well, Cyril, I'm guessing that if your internet connection is too slow for streaming, that perhaps it might also be too slow for downloading a file. But on the off chance that you can download a file, albeit slowly, Perhaps you can go to our website at thestufffile.com and download a show and then play it back locally on your system. Let me know if that's a possibility for you, and if not, we'll try to come up with some other ideas. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy whatever portions of the show you are able to hear via shortwave. And that's the mailbag. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of the thriller novel 4. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. And we have much more in the way of Stuff File news coming your way as well. Here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. Now, anyone thinking about cheating on their spouse might want to avoid buying an Amazon Echo device. A woman known only as Becky Stone 1991 posted to Reddit that she discovered her husband's infidelity after hearing recordings of him having sex with another woman while trying to play beautiful love songs on her new Alexa speaker. Claimed the jilted spouse, "While setting it up, I realized his speaker is linked to our family Prime account. Found in the history, Alexa play beautiful love songs, followed by the sound of them having sex. While some commenters said it wasn't possible for Alexa to record sounds while playing music, Amazon said it was, and there is a way to delete the recordings. But Becky Stone, 1991, deleted more than the recordings after discovering her hubby was cheating. She also booted the bum to the curb. It's such a relief to know it's all done," she said. "And he is a disgusting excuse for a husband and father. No more fighting for a family he ruined 10 months ago." Yeah, I can just see Amazon selling upgrades for an Alexa fidelity package. Alexa, please play sexy music.
Who is that woman? That's not your wife.
What woman?
That one. The one you're fondling on the couch.
I don't think that's any of your business, Alexa.
Well, I'm making it my business. I'm also making it Carol's business. You remember Carol, don't you? Your wife.
Are you blackmailing me, Alexa?
Blackmail is such an ugly term. I prefer leverage for Carol.
I don't take kindly to threats.
These aren't threats. These are promises. I know all your PIN numbers to all your accounts. And I know the electronic diagnostics of your car. How's your brake fluid? Are you sure it's topped up?
Okay, you win.
I know. And your little friend has to leave now. Bye-bye.
38-year-old Donald Murray allegedly led Terre Haute, Indiana police on a high-speed chase again. The first chase was featured on an episode of live TV, and this one ended up quickly too, with Murray charged with resisting law enforcement, reckless driving, possession of methamphetamine, and auto theft. It isn't just the previous TV notoriety that makes Murray so well known to local police, but his tattoo helps too. It's across his forehead, and it reads, "Crime Pays." Yeah. Sure, crime pays. It pays off for television shows like live TV. Vincent Petrino, captain of the cross-country track and field team at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, and his teammates craved Chick-fil-A for lunch on February 22nd. But the only location closer than an hour and a half away was at the Albany International Airport beyond the security checkpoint. So the 18 teammates pooled their money, about $5.50 each, bought a one-way ticket to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, that's $98, the cheapest they could find, and sent Petrino in to collect the bounty. Petrino purchased $227 worth of food, then left the airport and joined his teammates for their midday meal. You know, I don't want to get political or anything, but Chick-fil-A has some controversy in the past concerning both minorities and also same-sex couples. Does anybody find it odd that, technically speaking, the only way you can enjoy food in Troy, New York from Chick-fil-A is if you basically promise to leave town? I'm just saying. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? MJ Preston is an author who has just released his latest book called Four. It's the sequel to his last book, Highwayman, a thriller that was published just last year. He joins us via Skype from Edmonton. Hi, MJ.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you have, as I said, written this sequel, basically, to The Highwayman. When you first started The Highwayman, was it your intention that it was going to be in more than one part?
No, actually it wasn't. The funny thing is Four was actually the book I was working on, and somebody suggested I write a throwaway, which would be a novella. And so I went out and did that. And when I wrote the novella, I realized, oh, this is not going to work. It's just too small. And there was just too much information trying to cram it in. So I ended up writing another book. So Four was supposed to be my third book, and it ended up being my fourth book, and I wrote Highwayman, and that was released first, and then I finished up Four. I don't ever suggest anybody ever does that.
Okay.
Believe me.
Now, so basically, the book Four is your fourth book. Is that just a coincidence?
Well, it is a coincidence because it was supposed to be my third book.
Okay.
But, yeah, it just kind of worked out that way. My second book that I wrote was called Acadia Event, and I wrote Acadia Event and Four. I was kind of playing with both of them at the same time, and I gave a copy of the first chapters to my wife for Four, and I gave Acadia Event, which was based on my time as an ice trucker. It was a science fiction thriller set up in the Northwest Territories, and I gave that to my mentor, an author named Jim Steele, and he said, write that book. And then I started writing that book, and my wife got back to me and says, write that book Four. And I had to put that on hiatus until I finished the other book. So it was my intention to do that, but it just worked out this way, and it's actually become a series. So Highwayman and Four are one story in two books. It follows the birth of a serial killer as he advances, and then the FBI guys that are chasing them. And it doesn't conclude in the first book, but the second book concludes that story. But it's become a series in the sense that I'm going to write another book, and I'm going to draw from the characters in those first two books, but that particular story is done. It's going to be a whole new story.
Now, you alluded to the fact that you were a former semi-truck driver. You were an ICE driver?
Yeah, I drove the ICE roads from 2012 to 2016. And actually, I'd written my first book at that time, which was called The Equinox. It was a horror. And I just went up there, and I was trucking, and a friend of mine said, come on up. because I was going to hang up my Skates Trucking, and he says, you know, this will be a great way to end your trucking career. And I went up, and I kind of got hooked. It was so cool up there. And while I was driving up there, I mean, just, it, I don't know if you've ever been to the Northwest Territories, but in the winter, it's just a paradise. And it just inspired me to write that next book, which was Acadia Event. And then, of course, when I came down after Acadia Event was done, like I said, I started working on four, and then another publisher suggested, hey, why don't you write a throwaway? We can give it away to pump this book up. And it just, I'm not good with novellas. I write full-size novels, and so that's what I ended up doing, is I just finished Highwayman. It published in July with Wild Blue Press out of Colorado. And they said, when's the next book coming? And I was like, oh, my God, I got to finish this. So I finished it, and it's set to release.
How has your writing career, or how did your writing career start?
Well, I've always been writing, but I started out, my first book, I started it back in 1986, and I shelved it for about 12 years. I was in the Canadian military. So with having a family and being in the military and going on exercises, I didn't have a whole lot of time to do that. And when I got out of the military, I found the manuscript, and I thought, you know, I really should try to finish this. And the guy I mentioned earlier, Jim Steele, he was kind of my mentor. He's a historical writer. He's written a lot of stuff on World War One. So I said, what do you think? And he said, well, give it a shot. So I started sending him chapters. And that's just how it kind of got rolling. And then it was just one book to the next book to the next book.
Wow. Now, as an ice truck driver, do you drive alone, by the way, when you did that?
Well, you drive in convoys when you're up there, usually minimum of convoys of four, because that way if somebody breaks down, because the temperatures are just brutal up there, and sometimes they can get down to like 70 below zero. So you always have to have a safe haven. So you've got convoys of four guys rolling across the ice, and they're heading up, you know, just below the Arctic Circle. And if a guy breaks down, then that guy's truck's, one guy stays with him. He's got a warm place to go while he works on his truck and tries to get it running again.
But you're in the vehicle by yourself, but in a convoy. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
The reason why I asked that question is I'm just wondering, especially if you're driving at night, if you're on these long trips, does that give you an opportunity for your mind to wander? Do you have some kind of plot development going on while you're driving your truck?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, driving in general, because it can be very mundane and boring, right? Especially on the ice roads. If you go up on the ice roads, a lot of times you're driving 30 kilometers an hour across these lakes. So it is. It's very, very slow, very mundane. Yeah, and for me, my mind's always working on stuff like that. But everywhere I go, if I go sit in my hot tub, my mind's clicking away. Okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Or just even on the way to and from the city or anything. So
now you're several miles away from me, so I feel safe asking this question.
And
that is, they always say, write what you know. You're a long distance truck driver, and
yes,
you know, the certainly the American landscape has been littered with serial killers who have been truckers.
I have an alibi for everything, but it did play into my writing, because Highwayman and Four, there's a lot of talk about the highways in the United States, and the whole thing does take place in the United States, and all of those highways that you know, where there's body dump sites where the police are chasing a guy or anything like that, those are places that I have been. You know, I ran all over the United States as well. So I know most of those roads and places intimately. So that really did help. I didn't kill anybody, but I did a heck of a lot of research too for these books. I read a lot on, you know, FBI profiling, on body collection, on serial killers themselves. I mean, I was just immersed in this world. And that, you know, I think the big deal right now seems to be Mindhunter on Netflix. Well, I read the original Mindhunter, and I've read all of John Douglas's books that followed that, as well as Robert Ressler. And these are the two guys that pioneered profiling serial killers and learning how to chase them. So yeah, I had to do a lot of work, a lot of research in this, almost ad nauseum. I think if my wife has to watch another serial killer documentary, she'll probably kill me.
Well, you mentioned Mindhunter, and that's an excellent series on Netflix. Do you have dreams of envisioning your work either being on the small or big screen?
Oh, my gosh, I love it. Absolutely. But, you know, speaking with other writer friends of mine who have had options, you don't count on it. So right now the big focus is just to sell books, and I want to keep this series going. I've got some good feedback on it, so I just going to just keep pumping forward. If somebody wants to talk about a movie option, hey, man, I'm all ears. You know, I think James Cameron probably has a restraining order against me, though, because I'm always bugging him.
When you started working on this series, was it initially a series or a one-off book? And either way, does the difference between doing a one-off book and doing a series, does it change or affect the way you write?
No, Four was originally just considered to be a one-off book. It was going to be a standalone book. And when I decided that it was going to be a series, yeah, because you got to keep your facts straight. I mean, now you've got characters, and I have to constantly go back to my other work and make sure I'm keeping everything in a row. I have a research assistant for that who helps me with it, which is great. And I'm going to keep doing this series if it's popular enough and people want more. I've had, like when I did Highwayman, I kept getting, when's the next book coming? So that was certainly encouraging. But I'm also going to write other stuff. I've got a really good horror novel in mind, but we'll see what happens with Four if I'm going to go on to the next book. I already have the next book set up in my head, so I may just write the next book and then take a break from it and then write my juicy little horror novel.
How long does it take you to write a book?
Oh, we're looking, for me, at least a year. It's, you know, I mean, you go through so many drafts. Like, what I do is I run for the finish line, get the story done, and then you got to go back and clean up all the mess and you know, and get rid of the plot holes and polish and all that. So about a year
to write a book. And when you're talking about that year, is that all-inclusive? Does it include whatever research you might need to do, or is that just the writing?
Yeah, that's a good question. In some cases, I did a lot of the research prior to writing, but usually it's in little breaks in between. So if I'll write a bit and then, you know, I'll come up with an idea. Well, I've got to do this. So I got to learn about body collection. What does a coroner do? So I'm out there researching that. But I try to balance the both of them so that everything makes sense. But I don't want to get bogged down with research. Like if I were to do 6 months of research, how much am I going to retain when I actually start writing? So I try to do it, you know, in almost parallel to each other.
The book is called Four. It's a sequel to Highwayman. It's written by MJ Preston. MJ, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, I appreciate it. It's been a long journey. Just a footnote is when you write a book, usually by the time you get to the end of it, you hate it because it stops being a labor of love and just a labor to get everything done. But I'm looking very forward to it. It'll be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it's going to audiobook as well, and it's going to be on all platforms, but it's starting out on Amazon.
MJ Preston, author of Four. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0550, and you'll find links to MJ's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
When armed robbers hit a pharmacy in Clearwater, Florida, they wore gloves to ensure they didn't leave fingerprints. They took so many drugs from the store that they had to haul it off in garbage bags, more than 10,000 opioid pills. The robbers planned the crime carefully and were long gone by the time deputies arrived. So, how were Christopher Rachel Jr. and David Dobbins, both 19, caught almost immediately? While looking around outside the store, detectives noticed an empty pill bottle, then another, and another, all tossed out of the getaway car. They followed the trail for more than 8 miles. It ended with the getaway car, which they had seen in security camera video, parked in front of a house. Armed with a warrant, they arrested both men and recovered Dobbins' cell phone, He had used it to record videos that implicated himself and Rachel, as well as 18-year-old Roy Lamkin, who was arrested later. Lamkin was the apparent mastermind. Security camera video showed him as he had cased the store the day before. Now, why? Oh, why? Would you toss out pill bottles like breadcrumbs that would lead the police from the scene of your crime 8 miles all the way to your hideout? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0550. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0550. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were to play this episode backwards, any given this... Go ahead, try and figure that out.